That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
You know what we do need? More local radio. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got one of my colleagues on with me this afternoon, and I've been very excited to have this conversation. We did a whole show yesterday about democracy and how to restore some faith and trust, reduce corruption, and reform the frickin' system so that it works better for all of us. And part of that is talking about it and sharing that information. And not having somebody, you know, from Washington, D.C. or some fancy pants, like, tell you what to think. It's a grassroots kind of thing. So I'm going to be joined this next half hour talking about how is that working in the media? I mean, the term legacy media, I didn't even know that was a term until very recently. He is Corey Hartman. He is the Senior Vice President of Operations here at Civic Media. And we're going to talk about not just what our mission is, but the gaps that exist now within all of media and news media specifically, and how hard that is on smaller communities. So thanks so much for spending some time with me, Corey. It's such an important conversation. I'm glad you're here to have it with us.
Good afternoon, Maggie. Thanks for having me on.
Heck yeah. Over the last 20 years, we have seen local newspapers close,
right?
Especially and where they haven't closed, they have gotten bought up. My local newspaper is the Journal Sentinel. It used to be the Milwaukee Sentinel in the morning, the Milwaukee Journal in the evening. Then they became the One Thing. And I forget how many years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, it was bought by USA Today. And the building now is fancy apartments that they used to have the big printing presses in. But I still have a local paper that covers especially local government. But what we've seen is massive consolidation. We see it and hear it on radio. Anybody, just go get the blah, 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 blah app, which I'm not going to even say on air. So much consolidation. And now we have what are called news deserts. What are these things, Corey? And how are they hurting our smaller communities?
Yeah. So news deserts is basically where, especially rural communities, there's nearly zero coverage of local news. There's no reporters locally in your town or your county, even in some cases. And there's some parts of the upper Midwest and certainly the country that have gigantic counties that cover miles and miles of real estate, and not a single local news reporter there.
Not on radio, not in a newspaper, not in a weekly, not in a newsletter, not online, not in print.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
I saw a graphic. I don't have it in front of me, but I saw it just yesterday talking about how many journalists work in your county. And there were big, big chunks of Wisconsin and certainly all over the country, but we're primarily a Wisconsin network. We have, I would say it was about half were either extremely light blue or white, meaning zero.
No journalists.
No journalists.
It's amazing that there have been studies that basically overlay that map. And or do you have a local based newspaper, or are you in a coverage area of a locally based newspaper? Is your TV news, where is that actually out of? Is that part of a larger, like Sinclair Broadcasting? And if you overlay that in the places where you have news deserts, wages are lower, there's more government corruption, general overall health is less. It's basically, if you're in a news desert, your community actually ends up being negatively impacted by that. And it's, I'm going to have Richard Painter on next week. Wednesday, we're doing a show on cryptocurrencies, and Professor Painter, he's a lawyer, worked as the chief White House ethics counsel in the George W. Bush administration. He just testified before Congress about the corrupting influence of cryptocurrencies. But one of the reasons that news deserts are bad for all that community that has no journalists is because basically inept government, corrupt government, inefficient government.
There's no checks and balances.
Correct. It's the fourth estate for a reason. It's basically the fourth branch of government.
Yeah, I found the map while we were talking here. It's actually an Axios article. And there are counties in Wisconsin, there's at least a dozen that have zero local journalists. And just a few here, Monroe, Juneau, Adams, Green Lake counties, you know, very, very low. We're pretty fortunate in the south central part of the state in Sauk County, 43 local journalists for every 100,000 people. And Dane County, just slightly less than that. But
wait. Dane County has fewer journalists per 100,000 people than Sauk County does?
Yeah, because there's less population in Sauk County. So the per capita is greater.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. So, but it's hard to slice zero. Like, you've got zero,
yeah, zero
in some
divided
of these
by
counties.
Zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, folks, if you're just joining us, I've got the Senior Vice President of Operations for Civic Media with me. His name's Corey Hartman, friend and colleague, now a friend and colleague of yours as well. We're talking about how harmful news deserts are for communities. And again, tends to impact or skew towards impacting rural communities worse. And here's another little factoid. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but when presented with a statement that is objectively true or false, folks that live in news deserts far more likely to not correctly say if the statement is true or false.
Right.
And they were given statements about important political or public policy questions. And again, not something that's about an opinion. You're right, right? It would be things like, to oversimplify it, Ronald Reagan is dead, true or false, right? And if you live in a news desert, you're more likely to get those objective facts wrong. This is one of the things that I think, again, no matter where someone is on a political spectrum, we want to be informed. And even setting aside myself and my amazing colleagues, Todd Alba and Jane Matinair and Greg Bach and Pat Kreitlow, we do opinion. But one of the things that Civic Media is trying to do is to bring news back into all of our communities to make sure people don't live in news deserts. And again, when I'm listening to the network, I like to listen to the different stations around the state, so I can hear about what's going on in other folks' communities. How are we doing, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting there. I mean, when I joined the company, we had, you know, four radio stations. We're going to be over 30 here before too long, and probably more than that by the end of the year, I would say. And our biggest thing is to bring high-quality information and have a media platform that informs and inspires. That's our mission, that's our vision, that is the thing that we talk about all the time, and we think that it can happen in multiple ways, multiple formats. You know, we've got news talk stations, we've got music stations, we've got what I call full service stations, where they're literally talking about the local community all day, every day.
Yeah, I love that. And so many people that I know have always listened to our news talk, don't know about our music, and folks that listen to our music stations don't know about the news talk piece. But what's common about whether you're listening to one of our music formats, one of those all local all the time, or the news talk, you will get at the top of the hour news that is more focused on your community.
Local news. Yeah. Straight local information, factual based.
And that's the thing. Again, I don't care if I'm talking to a Republican or a Democrat. It's kind of like asking somebody, do you have a nice sense of humor and a fabulous sense of style? No one says, oh, no, I'm just terribly unfunny and I dress terribly. That's very rarely someone's response. And the same thing is the way that we think of, are you informed about XYZ? Everybody's going to say they're informed. Well, not all opinions are informed, and trying to let people get engaged by wanting to know. And most people get engaged by wanting to know about what's going on in their hood. It's why Nextdoor is an app, right? Like that's mm-hmm. a thing because people want to know what's going on in their communities.
It's why all of your local scanner pages on Facebook and all of those things are so
the blotters.
Because they're putting out every little thing that happens. That used to be radio's job, by the way.
Yes.
You know, every time the siren went off in a town or something, you know, something happened somewhere, you tuned into the radio station to find out what was going on. And that's one of the key things that we're trying to do is bring back all of that local information. And a lot of times news is just, hey, we dedicated a bridge or we, you know, there's 400 jobs being lost here or 400 jobs being created because a plant came to town and we gave them some tax breaks or whatever. And, you know, a lot of those are civic and community and service organization based news. And then every once in a while you have a plane crash, you know, and those are the things that people really want to know about. And they've found multiple other ways to seek out and find that information because they just don't have the resources. Half the counties in the United States don't have a newspaper at all.
Half. All of us want to be informed. And I mean that even when we say, oh my God, I can't consume any more news. If somebody asked the same person as I don't want to hear any more news, do you read the obit page if you are lucky enough to have a newspaper? Probably say yes. Do you want to know about a school closure in your community? Probably say yes. When people talk about the news, I think people are talking about the national stuff and you know, the talking head, the commentariat in the national sphere.
Right.
Sick of that. We get a ton of that. It's constant. It's on everybody's social media feeds. But we don't have enough local news that's talking to folks in the community about their community. I love that you, Corey, of course, with Sage's leadership at the helm, are trying to bring local news back and break some water into those news deserts, if you will. Now, if you don't already know this about Corey is also a storm chaser. And one thing everybody always wants to know about is the weather and the storms that are hitting your community next. You ever been in a grocery store when everybody's doing the mad rush? Yeah. I'm going to talk to Corey when we come back a little bit about storm chasing and weather as part of local news. So don't go anywhere from this news network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I don't know about you, but I always like a little cowbell. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. Happy Friday. We made it through another week. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. For this half hour, I've got with me Civic Media's Senior VP of Operations, my friend and colleague, Corey Hartman. We've been talking about news deserts, the negative impacts that being in a news desert has on a community, lower wages, lower overall health, less engagement, more corruption. I could go on and on and on. And one of the things that everybody always wants to know is about the weather. And certainly we could get into a long discussion about the cuts to NOAA and the National Weather Service, but we won't do that. We're just sticking with how important the news is to every community. Frankly, I think of it as a right to be informed, a right to know. Corey, you are a storm chaser, which I think is so super cool. And
you're going with one of these times.
I should. Oh my gosh. I would so love that. Don't mom, turn the radio off. Don't tell my mother. She does not like all the unsafe things.
All the storms seem to happen on your show though. Like, well, you're live,
at, you know, late after, yeah,
late afternoon. Late afternoon.
Yeah. That is when they wrote, that is the summer storm, like sweet spot.
Yeah.
How did you get into storm chasing and how important is weather and local weather for news, especially broadcast news?
So I was always kind of interested in weather, didn't really realize that it would turn into any part of my career, but I really got into storm chasing because of radio. You know, I was in South Dakota, there are tornadoes every day, it seemed like. Yeah. And one of the things that happened was the Spencer, South Dakota tornado of 1998. And that killed 6 or 8 people. It was an EF4, destroyed almost all of the town except for the mayor's house and a grain bin. And I was on the air that night and I felt some sort of tug of responsibility that, you know, I shouldn't have been in the studio. I should have been out there watching it, reporting it. Maybe those people wouldn't have died. Maybe they would have gotten to shelter. One of the things that came out after that storm was that There weren't a lot of storm chasers on there. There weren't a lot of people reporting. Mm. There was one sheriff and one research university group that was on that storm. And the National Weather Service didn't really know what was happening. And most of the people in town, if they're on the east side of town, they found out because their mom lived on the west side of town and called them.
Sure.
And said it was coming. And that's how they got the information. The power went out. The siren didn't blow. You know, it was just all of those things. And I said, well, there's got to be a better way. And I immediately started taking storm spotter classes, and a spotter versus chaser. Spotter, you just sit in one place usually and report in. And a chaser, you get to move around and follow them and get in better position and get a better line of sight. And I thought, well, that's exactly what we need in radio and television. It's reporting. It's storm reporting, you know. And I was fortunate enough to work directly for the Weather Channel for almost 2 years. They sent me all over the country.
No kidding. I didn't know that, Corey. Very cool.
Reporting just on everything. Tornadoes, floods, blizzards.
So you were the guy that they stick out in the inclement weather.
Yeah, but they never put me on camera. It was always my live stream just of the storm itself.
The storm shot.
Yeah. And then they would call me on the phone. I'd do a voiceover.
Yeah. Very cool. I always thought it was incredibly brave and showed an amazing commitment to trying to keep people informed when you, like the hurricanes, tornadoes, and you see these people in the newsrooms or staying on the radio to give people that information, even if they are in harm's way. It's certainly such an integral part of what Civic tries to do. I frankly love talking about anything other than politics. I do love talking about politics, of course, but so I especially find it to be quite a privilege to be live on the air when a significant weather event is happening. And usually you or one of our other amazing journalists out there are telling me what's happening so that I can tell all of you listeners. Again, it's an incredible, incredible privilege. As we, the network that is Civic Media, have been expanding into news deserts in Wisconsin and now in Michigan and Minnesota, how do you work the weather in? How do you define, like, okay, this station is going to draw weather reports from this particular person or from this particular outlet? How does that work?
Sure. Thankfully, we've got a nice relationship with my other company, Severe Studios. That's all the storm chasers that go out for me and shoot video and report and do things. I've also got four meteorologists on staff, plus Civic Media has their own great meteorologist, Brittany Merlot, on staff. And so we all team up on days like that and figure out what information the listeners need to hear. And that's usually based by the over-the-air coverage map. You know, there's only so many miles of real estate that you can cover succinctly and effectively and accurately. But we also do weather for 65 other radio stations across the upper Midwest. Mm. So we are watching the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Eastern Iowa. And that's really our coverage area with Severe Studios. And of course, Civic Media right in the middle of that. And one of our key places that we always have our eye. I always have the radar up. There's
always, you know, do. Why yeah. not? Quick story. We gotta let you go. Thank you so much, Corey, for being with me here. I always like talking about Civic. I once did Habitat for Humanity in Enid, Oklahoma.
Yes.
Tornado Alley, big time. It was in the spring. There was a very early storm. Slept in a church basement. I loved Enid. Thank you, Enid. And thank you, Corey. And thank you, everybody who's listening. Stick around. We got a rousing round of Ask Maggie up for you next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good luck. Welcome back, everybody, and happy Friday, one and all. Big thanks to Corey Hartman talking to me about what local radio can be, what we're trying to do here, a little about the weather. Appreciate you, Corey, and it's a real privilege to work with you here at Civic Media. I've got another good friend joining me for today's installment of Ask Maggie. If you've not heard this segment before, you're new to the show, this is where you, the listeners, get to send in questions to the email askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. You can ask me anything you want. And my senior producer, Jamie Martinson, gives me a timer, gosh darn it, so that I start. Stop blabbering. You could also, of course, text in questions. She curates them all week. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. But welcome back, Jamie, and happy Friday.
Thank you. Happy Friday to you as well. We officially made it to the end of a week, which is always the good news. And hey, we're 3D today.
I know. This is awesome. I'm actually sitting across the board from you, which is amazing. So thanks for being here with me.
You know, remote work. It's kind of interesting. But 3D is always good, too, versus the 2D.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we kind of got used to the 2D during COVID, right?
Yeah. And floating heads and all.
Yeah. And now I have to kind of say I like doing everything in my PJs. Like,
it's
so much better. So much better. Although the jeans I'm wearing today are very much like PJ jeans.
You have PJs. So, yeah. Basically. Yeah, I have basically PJs on, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so
that's good. Keep it comfy.
It's good stuff. We have some really good questions. We have some amazing listeners who want to know some really awesome answers from you, Maggie Dawn.
Uh-oh.
And so before we jump into that, Cal, you know, I say it every week. It is my favorite part. We've got to roll with the intro for Ask Maggie.
It's time to get your questions answered, Wisconsin style. Welcome to Ask Maggie, a rapid-fire round from politics to pop culture. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's Ask Maggie, and we're about to take your questions at lightning speed.
All right. Woo! So I know. Lightning speed, or as we always say, turtle pace. It's fine here at Civic Media on the Maggie Dawn Show.
I've never been a rule follower, so no surprise that I blow through my timer all the time.
Color outside the lines. Yes. It's the motto I live by. This is a really good question, and I think this is a really important one, especially after the Governor Evers news yesterday saying that he's not going to be rerunning here in Wisconsin. But Sarah from Green Bay, we're jumping right in, both feet. She wants to know this. She says, I keep dreaming of the day when, if sanity returns to politics. Mm. Aren't we all, Sarah? I heard a GOP representative on your show a few weeks ago discussing term limits. Mm. And just for the record, that was Duke Tucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, 75th Assembly District.
Can't wait to have him back.
Great. And she says it proves some civility it still exists in politics. Love that
thank
comment.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yes. And she said, we've got a long way to go, but who, Maggie Dawn, is your dark horse Democrat to watch in 2028?
Oh, my gosh.
I know we're going to
do. Does she mean like governor or national?
She doesn't specify. So if you want to do both, maybe that's okay, right? We're going to have people throwing their hats in the ring here in both races, governor now and on the national level. So this is, I know it's a tough one to answer, but it's a good question. And there, I think there are some outliers that people aren't really considering yet. And I'm excited to hear your take. So Cal, 60 seconds for this one.
So I'm actually, let's talk about the governor's race. And this is going to be not who I think is going to, it's just kind of a dream candidate and a dream governor. I know I'm biased, but I work for him, and he is an amazing human being. His name is David Crowley. He's the county executive from Milwaukee County. He has worked with Republicans in the past. He can do cross-partisan things. He is a regular dude. He cares deeply about his family. He just feels so Wisconsin to me. He's an incredibly hard worker. He went to night school to finish his undergraduate degree. And can you imagine doing that as an elected official? Just so humble, such a regular guy. I absolutely love the guy. David, if you're listening, man, I'd love to call you Governor Crowley. Here's my presidential, I don't know if he's my dream pick. I certainly always would want to see a woman.
Yes.
And I think I am a huge fan of Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. She's getting a little up there in age, but she has been such an amazing advocate for the middle class and consumers. So Elizabeth Warren is a dream candidate. I personally love, love, love me some Senator Cory Booker. Mm-hmm. I just do. I know some people don't really like his style, but like the guy's just himself, right? You can tell it's not super message managed. And I think he's an authentic guy. I think you can touch and feel him in that way that's so important in retail politics. And I'm going to throw this other one out there. I absolutely love me some Gwen Moore. I do. Mm-hmm. I love me some Congresswoman Gwen Moore.
She's fantastic.
But, you know, talking about term limits, thinking about who might hold that congressional seat whenever Gwen decides. This is another one of my former colleagues from Milwaukee County. You have heard her on this program many times, and her name is County Board Chairwoman and Supervisor Marcelia Nicholson. And
so impressive.
Those same qualities. Like, she's just a regular person. Mm-hmm. She genuinely cares about people. I think she has a real deep appreciation for the pain that everybody's feeling. And she is one of the most naturally gifted politicians I've ever seen. And I don't mean that in the EU politics way. I mean, oh my gosh, she has a room full of people that are screaming and yelling at each other and can't get it together. And she can somehow get her fellow 17 supervisors to find some common ground. She is really good at it. And boy, do we need some more of that.
Oh, for sure. We need a lot of people in politics right now on both sides of the aisle, no matter where your beliefs lie, no matter who your favorite candidates are. Let's be realistic. Both sides have some issues.
I want to see more people that don't have hundreds of millions of dollars.
Regular
or that
people?
Don't have a trust fund. Yes.
Like regular
David's
people.
A regular guy.
Yeah.
Right. I think Cory Booker's a regular guy. Elizabeth Warren, she is a regular person. Yep. Marcy is a regular person. Why did Tony Evers win?
He's a regular guy.
Because he's a regular guy. Seemed not like a politician at
Never
all.
Never polished.
Educator. Nice dude. Yeah. You can't talk with him and be like, well, that guy's a real jerk.
Right?
That, yeah. No. Everybody talks to Tony.
You're like, oh man, what a nice guy.
Right. And the fact that he's not running for a third term because he wants to spend more time with his family and his lovely wife, Kathy.
Yeah.
I mean, that just tells you what kind of genuine human being Tony Evers is, even if you didn't necessarily agree. And you're listening today, even if you didn't necessarily agree with the politics of Tony Evers. That's cool. We can agree to disagree on those things. But the fact that he's a genuine human being and is giving up his career in politics because of his family and his grandkids, nonetheless, to spend more time with them. Hello. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer on the human decency scale of things, right? I mean, to me, it is anyway.
Oh, man, let's bring decency back to politics. Sure would be nice.
Gosh, how far back do we have to go to find decency?
1976 Buckley v. Vallejo, Supreme Court decision that first laid the groundwork for the concept that money is speech, which of course then led to 2009 Citizens United and the declaration that money is speech, which was a full bear hug embrace of corruption in politics. I'm sorry. There was that rabbit hole I fell into there, Jamie.
It's okay. See, it's like Ask Maggie without actual questions. We still ask Maggie without the actual questions.
Call
it's
it like
fine.
The rabbit hole. Maybe that's the segment.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sarah, from Green Bay
yes.
for listening and your great question and for embracing talking with and finding mm-hmm. points of agreement with conservatives and Republicans of good faith.
And by the way, we're going to try to bring back a Duke Tucker at some point because he was super fabulous and he had a good time on the show.
And I need to play a little softball with GOP Representative Jesse James.
Yes.
I got to get that one on the docket.
Yes, we do.
Too.
We do. This is another really good question. And you're going to love this one because of your fandom for the Brewers. And so, Cal, we're going to give her, because I know you're going to talk about this for a little bit, because I know how great this season's been. So we'll give her 60 for this one, but it comes to us from Cole in Madison, listens on WMDX. Thank you for that. He says, there's only one thing to ask. How about those Brewers, Maggie?
How about them 60 Brewers?
60 seconds, Cal, when you're ready.
It feels so good to win, especially on a payroll that is so tiny in comparison. We talked about it with Jim Santel a little earlier today. Brewers sitting atop the division. Nobody thought it. It feels a little special to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like half the guys in the starting lineup now, they weren't even sure they were going to play in the major leagues this season. And they are an integral part of the Brewers roster. I love the grit. I love the fight. And I love people underestimating us. I actually finally heard us get mentioned on a show that will remain nameless, but it is on a big cable channel that talks about news a lot that I would probably listen to. And they talk about baseball a lot on their morning program, and they never talk about the Brewers. And they finally gave the Brewers a little name check and a little love this week. I was like, you're damn right.
Love it.
My favorite thing about the Brewers this season has to be the fight and the guys coming out of a complete obscurity. I love the Miz. I love his story.
Yep.
Woodruff
coming back. That's such a good story too.
Yeah,
right?
Woody, man.
Yeah.
Bring back the Woodman. Yeah. He's so amazing. I have had my heart broken so many times.
Right?
Hate you, Jesse Winker. You're a wanker. The loss to the Mets. And then, I don't know. It feels a little special. Like maybe, I'm going to get choked up. Like maybe Bob Uecker's looking down on us.
Yeah.
Little magic dust
from
the Uke.
Agreed. I think Uecker always had the little bit of magic in him.
I told you I was going to get choked up
on the air
today.
It's okay.
Over baseball.
It's okay.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, sports. You gotta get a little sentimental over sports. It's a big part of what we do here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. I think we can squeeze in one more.
One more? Okay. Let's see. All right. This is a good one. And this one's going to go back on your law degree. So we'll give you 60 Ooh. Seconds for this one. This comes to us from Lynn in Wisconsin Rapids, and she says, alligator Alcatraz in Florida is disgusting. Is there anything that can lawfully be done by citizens in Florida to shut this down? So, Cal, 60 seconds, and we'll wrap this up.
Thank you, Lynn. Let's not ever call it alligator Alcatraz again. It is a concentration camp. People who have committed no crime at all are in inhumane, someone called near torturous conditions. It is a concentration camp.
Yes. Citizens of Florida unite and file a lawsuit claiming that the state of Florida and the federal government are violating the 10th Amendment. The federal government has seized taxpayer dollars, state taxpayer dollars, to further and execute federal immigration law. That is a violation of the 10th Amendment. Florida citizens, if you are looking for a lawyer, I know one. It is I. It's an abomination. There's no other word for it. It is an abomination. It is a stain on America, just like Japanese internment camps were. We can do better, and we need to do better. Thanks so much, Jamie. Always good to see you. We got a little Terry Barr coming up next to close us out this Friday afternoon with what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Don't go anywhere. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Friday. It is the end of the show. We made it, everybody. I hope you are having a very, very happy hour and that you are working up to a fantastic weekend. And to help send you on your way, I am joined by my friend and colleague at Civic Media, Terry Barr, for what we like to call what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Terry. Good to see you.
Oh, and you as well. And yes, happy Friday to everyone. We should have a glass that we could clink so that we
Jamie,
celebration
make a note.
Of Friday.
Cheers sounds for Terry and I on Fridays. Well, there's got to be audio of a cheers. There has to be.
Absolutely. Otherwise, we'll just do one ourselves.
Yay! Yeah, we'll actually do it. That would require us to both double fist. Totally, totally reasonable.
Right. Well, I don't know if you would use a plastic glass or not, but that's what I'm going to talk to you about today when it comes to good, local, but maybe overlooked. July can be so many things. And it's also the month that is considered plastic free July. So many people actually sign a pledge to say they will not use those one-time plastics, at least during July, if not carrying over into other months and maybe for the long term. And, you know, often experts say start with the easy things like get a water bottle you can reuse or containers you can reuse, you know, those plastic bags we all get. And sometimes it makes it to the recycle containers or whatever. I know ours is great at the library. You know, try to use regular bags that you can reuse. And of course, plastic straws. And I love that some of my favorite places have now gone to paper straws. And they're pretty sturdy. They keep getting better.
The OG paper straws, though, Terry, were terrible.
Oh, yeah, the early days.
It was like,
I know, and the stuff would squirt out in the middle of the
straw. You ended up with a spitball in your mouth. First-gen paper straws, bad.
Yeah, but now much better.
They're on, like, version 5. Yeah, they're good now. They're good.
Yeah. So here's the question. Did you know that the mother of recycling is actually from Wisconsin?
I certainly did not, but that does not surprise me one little bit.
I got one for you once again. Her name is Millie Zantow, and she was originally from Prairie du Sac. And here's her story. She went to Japan in the 1970s, and then while there, she was inspired by what residents were already doing by trying to separate the trash and other items in the trash. So she then came home from that 1970s trip to Japan, and she was feeling very inspired. So when she got home, she started, you know, sort of pulling things apart and looking at plastics in particular. How can we start separating and recycling these things? This is basically what she called it. So in the end, she comes up with, you know, the little triangle that's on the bottom of recycle bottles, containers. She came up with that, with the little numbers on it. And of course, that grew from beyond Wisconsin to the entire country and even further. but it started in Wisconsin. And she also came up with, hey, how about we do this together? So she opened the first recycling, I don't know if you would call it like a center, but
yeah,
somewhere
like a
where drop-off everybody-
place. Yes.
Yeah, so everybody in the city could bring their recyclables and feel like, woo, we're a community. We are doing this locally together. Awesome. And then somebody got smart in the legislature and realized this woman knows what she's doing. So she helped actually write the 1990 recycling law for Wisconsin. Mm. And it simply banned certain items from landfills. And it also came along with the idea of trying to help every citizen in the state, and of course, beyond that in the country, to learn how to recycle. So she's in the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame. She once said, Maggie, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to try to do it.
I love that, Terry.
From Wisconsin.
Would it surprise you that I have a story or two about garbage?
No, not at all.
Okay. So
do
very
tell me.
Briefly.
Tell.
Yeah, story number one about garbage is when I worked for the city of Milwaukee, one of my big, huge projects was to help the city of Milwaukee and the city of Waukesha enter into a three-party agreement to run the joint materials recycling facility. These are called MRFs for people in the know in the industry. And the outside recycler, you have to look at commodity prices, how much that stuff is sold for, wear and tear of the trucks coming in. Really complicated deal. Helped get it written down. It was so cool. I love, like, lawyering is one of those cool jobs where you get to learn something else in addition to the lawyering, right? So to be able to write the deal, I had to learn all about MRFs and recycling. It was so amazing. My other story very briefly is, my parents were very early adopters of recycling. They also had a compost pile in the backyard. Took
I
me to an
composting.
Earth. Yes. Oh. Took me to like one of the very early on Milwaukee Earth Day celebrations. Oh. They brought recycling to our little church. There was a whole little group of them that tried to get folks to adopt the recycling. In advance of that 1990 law. So it all comes for full circle with you, Terry. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Oh, you too, my dear. Always great to chat with you.
Folks, that's Terry Barr. You can find her here every Friday with me for a little taste of what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. That's going to do it for me. Have a great weekend. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we recycle together.